Well, my talk will be about the DCS transition in lithium-6. Rather than focusing on the statics of this superfluid phase, I will talk about the dynamics of the transition itself. The work was done under supervision of Henk Stoof, also from the University of Utrecht, and partially in collaboration with Ian MacAlexander and Randy Ouellette from Rice University in Houston. Well, at present, there is also a lot of interest to trap fermions instead of bosons in traps. A promising candidate to observe the effects of quantum degeneracy in the fermionic gas is lithium-6, because it has a very large and negative S-ray scattering length. You can calculate by using just the regular VCS theory, you can calculate the transition temperature at which the S-wave pairing will occur, and this is essentially given by this expression, where here the S-wave scattering length enters the formula. Because it's so very large, this will be a kind of a big number, this KFA, for densities which are relevant for these experiments. Of course, as you know, for fermions, it's forbidden to scatter with S-waves if the atoms are in identical spin states, because this is due to the Pauli exclusion principle. So what you have to do in these experiments is trap not one hyperfine level out of the six, which are present for the lithium-6, but you have to trap two of them. Here is the hyperfine splitting diagram for this lithium-6 atom, and only the upper three hyperfine levels can be trapped in a magnetic trap. So you can trap, for example, these upper two states or any other combination of the two hyperfine states. Or what you also could do is trap in an optical trap any two hyperfine levels, and the most favorable combination would then be to trap the lowest two hyperfine states, because then you reduce the decay rate considerably. For example, if you use this formula for the critical temperature for a density of 2 × 10^12 particles per cubic centimeter in each hyperfine state, then the critical temperature turns out to be of order 37 nanokelvin, which is kind of high for these for fermion gases, because for example, for deuterium, the scattering length here is very much smaller, and you arrive at a critical temperature which is orders of magnitude lower and cannot be measured experimentally. I also want to mention that if you trap only one hyperfine level instead of two, then you can have P-wave pairing. Then what changes in this formula for the critical temperature is that you get, instead of KFA to the power one, you get KFA to the power three. Then the A here is not the S-wave scattering length, but it is the P-wave scattering length, which is -35 A-naught. So this quantity for identical densities becomes much smaller, and thus your critical temperature for P-wave pairing will become much lower, except possibly when you use this trick, which you heard in the last talk this morning, that if you change your P-wave, the potential with electric fields, then of course, then you will get a similar formula for the critical temperature with here a factor of power of one instead of three, and your critical temperature will be then of the order of the critical temperature which you get for S-wave pairing. Yeah, well, okay, yeah, you're right, yes. You also can have this mechanism by which you have a phonon exchange between atoms, and then you get KFA to the power two. But then there is a factor of minus 13 here, which gives you eventually a lower critical temperature. Now, the major disadvantage of having such a large triplet S-wave scattering length is that there is a lot of decay because the cross-section for inelastic collisions is very large. Now, this decay can be suppressed by applying a magnetic bias field, which is shown in this plot. And this plot shows the decay rate constants for all possible combinations of two hyperfine levels out of the three trapped in a magnetic field. And if you focus on this green line, which gives you the decay rate constant for the combination of 6 and 5, state 6 and 5, then as a function of the magnetic field, you can read off what the lifetime of the gas is, because you have to read the figure that given a magnetic field, for example, if you have 5 Tesla, then you multiply the decay rate constant with the density, and then this resulting number is one of the lifetime of your gas. So, for example, if you have, again, these typical densities of 2 times 10 to the 12 atoms in each hyperfine state, then at a magnetic field of 5 Tesla, the lifetime of the gas will be of order 1 second, which is, well, essentially enough to perform experiments. But if you have a magnetic field of 0.2 Tesla, then you can read off the lifetime, and it's of order 1 milliseconds, which is a little bit short, maybe. Now, experimentalists prefer lower magnetic fields, and so it's self-evident that you have to take a magnetic field which gives you a lifetime of the gas mixture which is larger than the nucleation time of the Cooper pair. So you need a lifetime of the gas which is larger than the time it takes to stabilize this superfluid phase when you go through the transition temperature. Now, you can estimate the nucleation time for the formation of Cooper pairs and to be of order h bar over the critical temperature. And again, for these densities, this amounts to 0.2 milliseconds, which is not so much shorter than the lifetime of the gas if you have a low magnetic field. So it's sensible to perform an exact calculation of this nucleation time. And in the rest of the talk, I will tell you how you can do such a calculation, and I will tell you what comes out of it. But before that, I will remind you of some standards from quantum mechanics. Well, in quantum mechanics, you have a wave function at some position x and time t, which has evolved from a wave function at some initial time and position through this overlap integral or probability amplitude, which I denote by W. Now, this probability amplitude is a path integral over all paths which go from x naught to x and at time t0 to t. And this path integral is over the exponent of the action. And this action itself is a time integral from t0 to t over the Lagrangian, which is relevant for your system. Now, from this L, you can derive conjugated momenta according just to this formula, which is just all standard. And if you know the conjugate momenta, you can calculate the corresponding Hamiltonian, which is given by this expression. Now, of course, this wave function psi satisfies the Schrödinger equation with this Hamiltonian. Now, what you also can define is a probability, which is a square of this probability amplitude. And as you can see from this expression for the probability amplitude, the square is a path integral over the exponent of the action, where now the action is a time integral, not from t0 to t, but it also runs back to t0 again, so it lies on a Kaldish contour, and this is due to the fact that you have this square for the probability, and it goes from t0 to t, and due to the square, it goes back to t0 again. So in a natural way, you are led to this Keldysh formalism, which allows you to consider dynamics of systems instead of just statics. Now you have to be careful a little bit because this field X is defined on the Keldysh contour instead of on the real-time axis. So what people usually do is decompose this field in terms of two fields which are defined on the real-time axis, and it consists of a classical part of classical part plus fluctuations. And on this contour, the x, the classical part is the same on both branches of this contour, but then the plus refers to the upper branch and the minus refers to the lower branch, so the fluctuations differ on both branches of the Keldysh contour. Now, probability now is not a path integral over x, but it is now a path integral over both the classical field, x classical, and over this fluctuation field psi, again over the exponent of the action, which is now a time integral over the real-time axis instead of the Keldysh contour, because you express this field x in terms of real fields which are defined on the real axis. Now what you have to do then, in order to arrive at an effective theory for this classical field, which is the important thing you want to know, you have to integrate out these fluctuations from this probability, and then you get the probability will then be a path integral over only the classical fields, and the action here is now the effective action, which only contains the classical field, x classical. And now the important point is that this probability satisfies the Schrödinger equation with now the effective Hamiltonian instead of the Hamiltonian which you originally had, and the effective Hamiltonian comes from this effective action. You again have to calculate, you can get the effective Lagrangian from it, and from that you derive an effective Hamiltonian. And now to see this psi, this fluctuation psi, they add, so to speak, noise to your system. So in a way they add classical mechanics to your quantum mechanics to your classical theory. So if you have in classical mechanics an equation of motion for your classical fields which is of this form with eta equals zero, then of course if you have a potential of this form, then your classical solution will be that x equals zero. But if you add noise to your problem, then you will have a solution which is, well, you will have a probability distribution for x, which is more or less a wave function around with a maximum at zero. Now, on the other hand, if you have a potential which is the shape of a double well, then you can have a classical solution here, but if you add noise to it, your solution will have maxima and the minima of your potential. Now I'm going to do the same thing for the BCS, to describe the BCS transition, and I just want to remind you now and then of these last two transparencies, because the whole calculation will be more or less the same. And maybe you get lost somewhere, but just remind these two transparencies which I showed. Well, so we want to describe the dynamics of this BCS phase transition. And to do that, we want an effective theory for the BCS order parameter delta. Now, the starting point is a probability, which is a path integral over an action, which is where the fields are now the fermionic fields psi, and they represent the atoms. And, of course, and the action is given by this expression. Here is the time integral, which runs over the Keldysh contour, going from minus infinity to plus infinity and back to minus infinity again. And here is a sum over alpha, which is a sum over the two hyperfine levels which I trap. And I call them also alpha can be up or down, so this is for notational simplicity. And then here are the fermionic fields, psi alpha and psi alpha star. This here is a kinetic term, the kinetic energy and the chemical potential for each hyperfine state, and this here is the interaction, which is a local interaction. And you can see it, the interaction is only between atoms in different hyperfine states. Now, in order to proceed, we use a technical trick, because, it's very difficult to do this path integral over the fermionic fields, because here is a quartic term. So you really want to get rid of this, and to do that you use this technical trick which is called the Hubbard-Stratonovich transformation, which essentially means that you multiply this whole expression by one, or which you also can write in the form of a path integral over a Gaussian, which is normalized to one. And if you plug that in there, then you can immediately see that this quartic term they cancel against the square of this part, and you obtain an effective action for an action which is now only quadratic in this fermionic field, and then you can easily integrate that out, and you arrive at an effective interaction for this order parameter delta, which is given by this expression, which probably doesn't say much to you. Now, in this expression, this G naught is the normal Green's function, or also it's a diagonal Green's function, and it satisfies this equation. And this sigma is the anomalous or off-diagonal Green's function, or also called the self-energy, and it is given by this expression. And now you have to remember that these matrices G naught and sigma, and also the fields delta, they are defined on a Keldysh contour running from minus infinity to plus infinity and back to minus infinity again. And now we have to, the next thing to do is rewrite this integral over the Keldysh contour, rewrite it as an integral over the real time axis. And to do that, we again decompose this field delta in the classical part, and plus or minus fluctuations, where the plus is again on the upper branch and the minus on the lower branch. Now, again, to remind you again, these fluctuations, they allow your order parameter, or the classical part of, the classical field phi, which is essentially the order parameter, allow it to evolve from a zero value above the critical temperature to a non-zero value below the critical temperature, because this phi you can calculate the effective potential for this classical field phi, and above the critical temperature it's essentially a parabolic well, and your phi is essentially zero. And if you go through the phase transition, then you change this potential and it becomes a double well potential. And because you have the fluctuations here, this classical solution can wiggle down and fall down to one of the minima to the minimum of this potential. Now, a lot of calculation is needed to obtain to transform the integral over the action real axis time integrals instead of integrals over the Keldysh contours. And you can find this, for example, in an article by Abrahams and Tsuneto from 66. And you have to make two important approximations. And the first one is that you are very close to the critical temperature, such that this quantity is smaller than 1. And then you only have to take the quadratic and quartic terms in the action into account. And the second approximation that you make is the gradient expansion, which essentially says that the fluctuations in delta, they are small, they are on a larger scale than the fluctuations in this matrix G naught. And then you can in this delta squared part of the action, you only have to take terms to order ddt, and lambda squared and lambda squared into account, whereas in the quartic term of your action for delta you can take only the local contribution. Now you do all these calculations and then you arrive at an action of this form. Here you have a time integral over the real axis only instead of the Keldysh contour, and then you have two terms which are linear in the fluctuations, and this one is the complex conjugate of this one, and then you have a term which is quadratic in the fluctuations given by this term. Of course you don't have a term which is quadratic in the classical fields, because the contribution from this time integral on the Keldysh contour from going up is cancels against the contribution from the time integral of going down. So this just, you don't have that term. Now in this action for the classical field phi and the fluctuations psi, you see a number of constants, and this alpha here is given by this quantity, and it, as you can see, it changes sign at the critical temperature. So it go above the critical temperature, it's a negative factor, whereas below the critical temperature, it becomes positive. Here, this beta here is always negative, and this term, in a sense, is a kind of interaction term. It's a non-linear term, and then you have this term, which is a kinetic term, but as you can see, it has no imaginary I here. So this term is not it is a dissipative term instead of a normal ddt as you have in the Schrödinger equation. So this, you can see here the dissipation, and of course there is always a relation between the dissipative terms and the quadratic fluctuations, which is called the dissipation fluctuation theorem. And you can indeed show that this action satisfies this equation. Now, if you neglect for a moment the quadratic fluctuations in this action, then the action becomes linear in the fluctuations psi, and the path integral over psi can be done easily, because you have just only an exponent of linear terms in psi, and what you get then is a delta function, which essentially then gives you the nonlinear Schrödinger equation for this classical field phi. But of course it's a dissipative nonlinear Schrödinger equation instead of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation which you have in case of the Bose-Einstein condensates. Now this and naught here, I should have said, is the density of states at the Fermi level of the system. Now, of course, you should not neglect these quadratic fluctuations, but in principle, you can still integrate out the fluctuations. But if you do that and derive the equation, the Schrödinger equation for this probability, then it turns out to be a very difficult equation, because if you look in real space, then this nabla squared term couples all positions. And then you can say, okay, then I Fourier transform the whole equation, but then this interaction term couples all possible values of k with one another. And so this becomes a very complicated equation. Now, fortunately, these experiments will be performed in a trap, which essentially has the shape of a three-dimensional harmonic oscillator with some frequency omega naught. And because of that, the density is position dependent, and of course also the chemical potential mu. Now also these quantities, alpha, beta and gamma, become position dependent. The temperature. Well, they just come in because, well, you have to integrate. You have to integrate. Well, I have to go back then. You have to integrate this equation and. How did they go in? What did you say?
Are you assuming that fluctuations are coming through parameters?
It comes through parameters, yes. It's just you just calculate it and it comes in, because you can re-express. Well, you have this Fermi. The Fermi level is in there everywhere, and you can re-express the Fermi level in terms of the temperature. What did you say? Oh no, you don't have a displacement on the. Well, they lie on top of each other, but on the way back you have. The fluctuations can be different on the way back, as from the on the way up. So it's not that you displace the Keldysh contour a little bit from the axis or so. So these parameters alpha, beta, and gamma, they become position dependent. Now the thing to do in order to be able to solve your problem is that you expand this classical field phi and the fluctuations xi in terms of modes according to these formulae, where these psi n, they satisfy this equation, which essentially is a Schrödinger equation with where the terms are position, these factors are position dependent. Now you make the following assumption, which is actually first done by Baranov last year, that you are very close to the critical temperature, so the region where this order parameter exists is very small, and you can essentially neglect the density change over this region. So you approximate the density by the density in the center of the trap. And if you do that, then this density of states at the Fermi level becomes also position independent. You can take the value in the center of the trap, and also this Fermi velocity, which enters into the gamma here. You also can take the value which it has in the center of the trap. But of course, this TC here, this TC is varies on the same scale as the delta itself varies, so you have to expand this TC around the center of the trap. Now, if you do that, then this equation up here, it becomes a Schrödinger equation for a three-dimensional harmonic oscillator with some effective omega, and the eigenvalues epsilon n, they satisfy this equation here. And in order to derive that, you use that the density, you need this to expand this density in this critical temperature. Well, this density satisfies approximately this formula around the center of the trap. And if you then use the zero temperature expression for your Fermi, for the Fermi energy, then you can derive this quantity R, which essentially gives you the size of the region over which the density changes.
But this part is completely not connected to the previous one, because you can go through it from the very beginning without density fluctuation.
No, but I have the DDT term in here.
Because it's already not time dependent.
No, it's no. Yeah, this is time independent, but I still have this action right here, which has a time dependence, and I'm only going to. I want to get rid of this Nabla square term, essentially. Then you can, if you have made this approximation, then this is a wrong sheet. Sorry. Well, before I go on, I first want to focus again on this expression, on this formula which gives the eigenvalues As you could have seen in the from this equation here, it used to be that if alpha changes sign, then you are at the critical temperature. But now you added this term, this Nabla squared term, and now the critical temperature is this temperature where the lowest mode changes sign. So the eigenvalue of the lowest mode changes sign. And you can see from this expression, which gives the eigenvalues epsilon n in terms of the temperature, that the lowest mode changes sign at a temperature which is lower than the homogeneous critical temperature in the center of for the density in the center of your trap. So the critical temperature of a trapped gas will be lower than the critical temperature for a gas with the density similar as the density in the center of the trap. And this was also derived by this guy Baranov last year. Now, if you are close enough to the critical temperature, then you only have to take the zero mode into account, because this is the only one which becomes unstable, and the other ones, they are all small. So it suffices to take only one single mode in this expansion for the classical field phi and the fluctuations psi. And this psi naught is given by the ground state of this three-dimensional harmonic oscillator with effective omega, and is given by this expression. And now you can, for a numerical example again, plug numbers in for the density. Again, we take this 2 times 10 to the 12 particles per cubic centimeter in each hyperfine state, where you had this homogeneous critical temperature of 37 nanokelvin. Now, this lowest mode becomes unstable at a temperature of 31 nanokelvin instead of 37. Now, and in order to check whether the approximation is indeed correct, you calculate this L delta, which is the distance over which the order parameter exists, and it's in terms of the trapping potential, the length scale is given by twice this length scale, whereas the R, which was the quantity which measures the distance over which your density changes, is indeed much larger. Now the second mode becomes unstable at a temperature which is 26 nanokelvin. So as long as you below or around this temperature, your theory will be correct, and you should not go below this temperature. Now you can integrate out the fluctuations by first performing the integral over x, and then the path integral over the fluctuations, which are now represented by this B naught fields. And then you arrive at this effective action for the classical field phi, which is now given, which is given by this expression. And from that you derive the effective Lagrangian, and then again you derive the conjugate momenta corresponding to this Lagrangian, and you derive the effective Hamiltonian for your system. And then you arrive at this Schrödinger equation for the probability distribution, which is in this case a Fokker-Planck equation, given by this expression. And if you do some introduce some dimensionless variables according to these equations, then this equation can be written in this form, which is essentially the Fokker-Planck equation for a single mode laser, where here this term denotes the diffusion. This I here is the intensity in case of a laser. This term here is phase diffusion. This term here is the drift. And this quantity A is the pump parameter in case of a laser. And in case of a laser, if A is smaller than zero, then you are below threshold. In our case, if A is smaller than zero, then you are above the critical above the critical temperature, and if A is larger than zero, then you are below the critical temperature or above threshold in case of a laser. So in short, what we have done up till now is we had the original theory for the fermionic fields. For the fermionic fields, we derived from that an effective theory for the order parameter delta, and expanded this delta in one single mode, and obtained a Fokker-Planck equation which is identical to that for a single mode laser. Now, to study the dynamics of the phase transition, you have to look at the evolution of this probability distribution as a function of the time. And the first thing to do then is determine the stationary solution of this equation, and this stationary solution is a Gaussian, which is centered around this pump parameter A. But you have to remind that this variable I is always larger than zero. So if you are above the critical temperature and this A is smaller than zero, then you only have a tail of a Gaussian distribution. Whereas if you are below the critical temperature and this A is positive, then the Gaussian is just a Gaussian around I equals A. Now you can the phase transition itself, you can imagine, is that you change this parameter A from a negative value suddenly to a positive value, and this can be done suddenly because the cross section for elastic collisions is large in the case of lithium 6 because it has such a large S wave scattering length. Now the evolution of this probability distribution describes the dynamics of your phase transition. So you go from one stationary state with an A smaller than zero to another stationary state with A larger than zero, which is shown in this plot for several times. Well, at t equals zero, you change your pump parameter A, and then in the beginning you have this stationary solution, or actually just a tail of a Gaussian, and then in the course of time you see this probability distribution evolve from this initial stationary state to this final Gaussian, which is centered around the positive value of A, which I chose. In this case it is plus 4, so my Gaussian is centered around 4. So here you see more or less that your order parameter, which is the average of this quantity I, changes from a small value below the above the critical temperature to its stationary value below the critical temperature. And the time scale in which this happens is of course the nucleation time, which we wanted to calculate from the start. And I define this nucleation time to be the time which corresponds to this dimensionless time tau of is unity. And in case of if you take again these typical densities of 2 times 10 to the 12 particles in each hyperfine state, then one unit of tau corresponds to 8.8 milliseconds. So this is, well, a little bit larger than the estimate we made for the nucleation time. So I arrive at some remarks and a conclusion that in the first place, we took this value A is plus 4 because it corresponds to this temperature, and this is just the temperature at which the interactions with relative to the level spacing of this effective harmonic oscillator is still of order 1. So you can indeed neglect the coupling between the different modes. Now, of course, you can improve your theory by taking into account more modes, and well, maybe you get then a Fokker-Planck equation for a multimode laser or something like that, but we didn't do that yet. And this nucleation time, which we estimate to be of order h bar over the critical temperature, and show that it was of order 0.2 milliseconds, for these densities indeed gives a good rough estimate for the true nucleation time, which is 8.8 milliseconds. But you can see it's a little bit larger. So if you want a lifetime of your gas mixture, which is of order of this nucleation time, then you need, if you want to trap your gas magnetically, then you need at least a magnetic bias field of 0.7 tesla, which is maybe a little bit high. But so what you better could do maybe is trap the lowest two hyperfine levels in an optical trap. That's more or less what I wanted to say.
Isn't the figure of 2160 angstrom for the spin triplet state, in which case, surely if you're going to field with comparable to the hyperfine crossover field or lower, the effective area is going to be very considerably less than that?
2.6? Magnetic field this changes, and it's up to as low as 0.05 tesla, it will be minus 2160
A0. Yeah, may I ask you one question, which is something is more important for all these things. When you have S pairing, you are discussing S pairing.
Yes.
You need to have the splitting for two to spin projection less by energy family, less than TC. It means that the very small splitting, magnetic splitting of two energy families of spin up and down completely destroy the space.
Yeah, you mean that the densities have to be very close to identically.
Well,
that's true.
Incredible.
Yeah, well, it's
considering.
Well, for example, for this, if you want the density in the center of the trap of 2 times 10 to the 12th, you can, well, I did a calculation, and then you the difference in numbers of particles in each hyperfine state can be as much as 10%. So I 10%. Well, the density then is very, difference in density is not so large then.
But it's necessary to compare with temperature transition, which is 10 minus 9.
Yeah, maybe that is small, yeah, that's a small quantity, but... Yeah.
And that is why Baranek and others have specially considered the situation with T, with the triplet and T spare, because just in this case, if you have difference in energy, it's better.
Yeah, but the problem there is that you also need then to trap two hyperfine levels. It doesn't then do so much matter whether if they are equal or not, but you have some maximum which is not so sharp. But still you have to trap two hyperfine levels. But on the other hand, your critical temperature will be much lower, so you need much higher densities. And then the gas can become mechanically unstable because you still have this S-wave scattering between atoms in different hyperfine states.
Because it's impossible to have such a coincidence between two energy terms.
But I just mentioned, this is a point which my postdoc Andrew Madari and I considered a paper which was published recently, and we came to the conclusion that at least in principle there might be ways in which you could get a transient situation if the surfaces were equalized by appropriate NMR techniques. And I think Henk and his group have come to the same conclusion.
Normally when you derive effective action, so you integrate on high energy modes or high momentum modes, that's okay. But in this Kevich formula, which I would not have time to really redo all of this, it seems to me that the classical part and the noise part, what you have written down, I have no reason to see that why the classical is always larger in some sense than the noise part. So when you integrate in the noise part, do you have to worry about something here?
And I make the assumption that the noise of the fluctuations are relatively small, indeed.
Yeah, but as they show up in the decomposition of this original field as a classical, some of the noise, I mean, there's no reason to believe why.
Well, normally fluctuations are not. Well, in mean field theory, you also neglect fluctuations around the mean field.
Okay.
The first question refers to your comment that one might want to try to test two hypermagnetics in an optical test. Now, I vaguely remember that in some briefing they showed that the S-wave tested in the S-wave company to some hypermagnetic benefit, so are there certain
increases? Yeah, you have to look at that, yes, because you have more or less to have the electrons I don't have the picture of the flashback resonance. Well, you more or less have to take care that the electron spin of the two hyperfine states is identical, because then you can interact with S-wave scattering. But you have a different nuclear spin. But then, because of the identical electron spin, you interact with a triplet S-wave scattering. So and
the two lower hyperfine levels, lithium-6, nearly interact via the triplet potential. And there's a Feshbach resonance at about 800 Gauss, which is makes the scattering like go big, negative or positive. Right. Scattering light, the two lows.
It's about zero compared to 2000.
That quickly goes to.
You have to apply a magnetic bias field, yes. You can get a flashback resonant. What did you say? Well, it's large from the first Feshbach resonance, essentially, from 0.08 Tesla. And from if you have passed this Feshbach resonance, then the scattering length becomes -2160, and then at 2 Tesla you have another Feshbach resonance, and then.
Not a very important point, but since people raise the question about the validity or certain approximations in the Keldysh path calculation, I just wanted to ask, I think, isn't it true that if you just do a simple calculation of the T matrix in simple BCS theory, assuming that you're linearizing around the normal state, then you can calculate the rate of instability, as it were, against the formation of pairs. And I think it comes out essentially what you said.
I don't know.
Much simpler. I think you avoid some of these problems. I think.
Of course, it was absolutely not necessary to consider. I would like to ask you why it was necessary to consider such specific and complicated things to obtain what. Because what you mentioned at the end, for that it's not necessary to use Keldysh algebra completely. So what, for the sake of what?
You can see this evolution of your order parameter. Very nice. I think you can see the evolution of your order parameter when you go through the phase transition. Very nice.
No, evolution, you mean what is the kinetics of formation? What do you mean?
from going to from zero to a finite value.
Zero what?
Zero some.
Kinetics of the formation.
Yeah.
You obtain estimation that time is age divided energy term.
No critical temperature, which is.
Exponent KTC. Yes, KTC, but KTC in this case.
It's much lower than the Fermi energy, yes.
No. TC, it's, what is it, TC? It's just in this case.
Well,
what is TC?
TC is.
Is the energy term?
No.
No.
We are not. We are.
Superfluid. Superfluid. Yes?
Yeah.
But again, I don't understand what is it for what kinetics you just described.
Well, I described the formation of I describe how this that order parameter goes from zero to a finite value below the critical temperature. I described the dynamics of the formation of this.
Oh,
you can do it this way.
Any others?
Well, in mean field theory, you cannot. I think you cannot take the time evolution into account. You can.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry. Announcement. Okay. Yeah.